Story Time Podcast. Here we go. It's the Story Time Podcast with Brandon and Dave. Yeah.
That's the song number two.
Dave, you always make fun of me because we have a theme song and then I sing. But guess what? I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, but did you notice that this time I did the third theme song to make fun of your second
That's the song. Second song, third one now.
Hey, that was the fourth one. Okay.
Dave, have you realized what we just happened? What just happened?
We had a fourth dimensional song.
Yes, but also we just started our second podcast in 2 weeks. This is a big deal. We're back on schedule.
Brandon, this is a parade, and like we have two floats so far, and I'm going to say we're going to have floats that go all the way to Christmas. What do you think?
Wow. We're talking about floats now. I do love floats. We are getting into Thanksgiving season.
My favorite.
Hey, Dave, before we dig into what we have today, you went to Sleepy Hollow for Halloween. I asked you to take some voice memos, you certainly did not do that. Give me an explanation why, and then tell me about Sleepy Hollow.
Okay, first, why I did not. Okay, so
you don't care about the podcast?
Do you want this to be a multiple choice and I select one, or do you want me to just tell you free?
Yeah, multiple choice. Here we go. Is it A, you don't care about the podcast? B, you hate me? C, you think that it was a stupid idea and you just didn't want to tell me? Or D, all of the above?
E, fill in with your own answer.
That's not how multiple choice works, but okay.
Well, I was hoping you would have given me what I wanted on that.
No.
Okay. None of the above. E. Oh. Okay. Is the one. Okay, well, that's how multiple choice works. Okay, and then the next question was, okay, if no, explain why. And this is what I have to say. I brought my charger and my phone, and I asked the person in the car, I was like, are we going to have a charger? And like, yes. And so I go into the car, and I look in, and then they do not have the thing they said they would have. And so I
– This is classic Dave. This is classic Dave. He blames things.
The truth.
Yeah.
Here's the worst part of it is that then I was the only one that was able to get a connection for some reason. I don't know if this is even real. If they were taking advantage of my gullibility.
It sounds almost like different realities.
You're foreshadowing. I ended up having to be the one that does the map quest for us to get there. And in the process of doing that, it just takes up so much battery. I hate that about the GPS. It just sucks it up.
If you could fix it, you would.
I would. And so I got us to Sleepy Hall using that. But by the time I got there, my phone was like really low on battery. And I was trying to conserve it. But it just – by the time that we really got to where I would have wanted to do the interviews, which by the way would have been later when there was actually people there because we got there kind of early in the day. And we were just going to like farmer's market and experiencing the town. But what I wanted to do was interview people that were actually like participating in the
Halloween.
Yeah. The people that would have had some stuff to say. That being said,
I did get a message from one of your friends that said, hey, Dave used my phone to do one interview. And she sent me that clip. We're going to play it right now. Okay, cool. Let's play it.
Hello. This is Dave. I have a podcast. It's called
Starry. What's it called?
It's called Starry Time with one R.
That's weird, but okay.
Right. So here we are in Sleepy Hollow.
I love it here.
Curious what your thoughts are on this Hallow's Eve that we're in.
Scary, spooky, headless.
What brings you to this? What brings you to this this church here that we're at? That's next to this graveyard. What's going on in your head there?
I wanted to pray to the Lord.
Which Lord?
The God.
The Godhead three in one?
Yeah, amen.
Okay. Do you have any family that's here with you? You're here alone?
No, all of them are here.
How many are there?
Three.
The three?
Three
what
in
are
one
they?
Family, see?
Three in one family. Okay, so you've got a father?
Father,
and
no. Father, mama, and dad, and Danny.
Two dads, okay.
No, Danny.
You silly little girl. Okay. what do you think you're gonna? What are you dressed up as there?
I'm Cupid.
Oh, this is Cupid. Okay, yeah. I like the black color that you used for this
it's
one.
It's black Cupid, not like racist Cupid. Like dark Cupid.
Oh, Cupid in the okay, yeah. So what separates a dark Cupid from a regular?
I make people fall in love who shouldn't. Like your parents, ha.
Little girl, no more. I would say that my parents love each other still. They're still together and they're making great strides in the world of staying together.
Okay, happy Headless Day. Bye.
Okay, thank you for talking.
Man, that was weird.
I can't believe that I even had that interview. You'd think that several points that I would have just ended it, you know?
Well, yeah, but you still went for it. Hey, Dave, now that we've gotten this far, we have another co-host today. His name is Brett. Brett, welcome to the Starry Time.
Oh, thanks so much. Just happy to
be
here.
Hey, Brett, could you veto that entire moment from being on the podcast?
That moment is vetoed. That was really just uncomfortable. Okay. And awkward.
We'll see. We'll see if it makes it or not.
Yeah, but ultimately, that little girl is the one that gets to decide.
That's true.
Hey, Brett, welcome to the Starry Time. I know you're a big fan. You texted me this week. You said, all I want to do before I die, hopefully that's not soon, but all I want to do before I die is be in the Starry Time. So you're welcome. Thank you. You know.
So which leads us to the first question. How many episodes have you listened to that made you want to be on so bad?
Yep.
Pass.
Okay. Hey, Brett, we're going to ask you, this is rapid fire round.
Rapid fire.
Where okay. We get to ask you.
Oh, Brent, can we take turns? Like you ask and then
yes.
I ask.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No. So we're going to go back and forth a few times and we're going to ask you questions. No topic or question is off limits.
Oh, okay. All right.
Dave, you start. Ready?
I'll do my best.
Go.
Okay. Favorite type of meat?
Steak.
Favorite type of watermelon?
The green kind.
Okay.
The name of your father?
Christopher.
The name of your mother?
Cynthia.
How many kids do you want to have?
Two.
How many dogs do you want to have?
As many as I can afford.
What was your favorite candy bar growing up?
That's tough. Can I give you a top three?
Sure.
So this is the one that stumped you, huh?
Yeah. I'm gonna go Hershey's Dark, Twix, and Crunch Bars.
Aliens, yay or nay?
Nay on aliens.
What's your favorite time of day?
Morning after first cup of coffee.
Best guitar solo?
Prince? All of the above.
All of it.
Okay. Any conspiracy theory that you support?
Not widely, no. Not, okay. I'm not really familiar with too many of them. I've heard of, the JFK theories and the Trade Center theories. Just not buying in.
Ghost, yay or nay?
UFO, alien, ghost. I'm going to go no UFO, no alien. On the fence with ghost.
Oh, on the fence.
Going to be on the
yes,
fence.
Yes, please.
Well, you're a good addition to a Skeptics podcast. Dave, last one.
Okay. When you go to sleep, do you prefer backside or stomach?
Good question.
Oh, stomach. Stomach all the way, rolling onto the side.
Okay, so a little roll in the middle.
Nice. Do you lay on your stomach?
Well, if I lay on my back, my wife will slap me because I will inevitably snore.
I've never been able to
You're a married man. Okay.
Indeed.
Dave.
Yeah. Hey, also, just so you know, Bran, I have read that sleeping on your stomach is a better way to try and have more vivid and memorable dreams that you'll like be able to recall.
Oh man, where'd you hear that?
Just a little podcast that that we plug every week.
What's it
called? I'll just go ahead and get that out of the way now since we brought it up. But our friend Nathan, who I think is probably gonna end up being on the show eventually. He has a podcast. Call
maybe before Christmas
to eat Perchance to Dream, and if you are somebody that that's kind of into the paranormal and also the dream worlds, then go give that a listen.
Hey, does he plug ours?
Yeah, he does.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure this was a mutual.
Do you listen to his?
I know. I listen. This is a true story. I actually do listen, but I usually don't make it to the very very end.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. I mean, kind of like I do with our own show.
But okay, well, you record it, so you at least listen once.
Well,
to me,
you'd assume so. But.
Oh, Bran, I was hoping you'd say something nice to me there, but you went for the mean comment.
So, Brett, you're excited about doing this show. We decided what better episode to bring you on than the episode where we do an interview with Dr. Ruth Kastner,
wow.
who is she studies quantum theory. So he said, what better person to bring on with Dr. Ruth Kastner than Brett?
I know a lot. I know a great deal about quantum theory.
You know who actually does know a lot about quantum theory?
Who's
is
that?
Dave. Dave?
Dave.
Are you excited about Dr. Ruth Kastner?
I would be lying to say that I'm probably more excited about this one than almost any of our previous ones. Not to insult any of our prior guests, I didn't really know anything about what they were going to say, so I didn't have anything to be excited about. There's actually things I'm hoping we'll get to talk about in this one, so it's a different way to be anticipating an interview that I've
and
usually had.
I do want to say this. I listened back to last week's podcast, and the more that I listened to it, Dave, the more that I'm certain that we got hoaxed.
We didn't get hoaxed because you get hoaxed if you believe it. We never – what was our main point? Our point was that whether or not this fella, which I think we both would say is just not – it's just not real. But either way, it made for a good – like the work that person put in to give us a good story, I was just – you know what? Let's let him have it.
It's worth a listen, I think, but
yeah.
Just listen knowing – like, and it's funny. I got an email the next day from a listener. It was very nice. He said a lot of nice things, but he said, be careful who you have on the podcast. Don't bring on fakes. So I don't know if that was a stab at, what was the guy's name again?
Chuck Wenzel.
I don't know if it was a stab at Chuck Wenzel, but it sure felt like it. But hey, if you want to email us, speaking of which, you can email us at storytimepodcast@gmail.com. It's storytimepodcast@gmail.com.
Bring in your fake and true stories and we will listen.
Hey, we're excited tonight. Steve sounded a little bit sick last week. And he's
did he?
Yeah, and he's still.
Maybe it was the ghost of Steve.
He's still sick this week, so we're gonna have Brett do the news.
Oh no,
we're excited about that. So that's coming up in just a second. Hey Dave, real quick, Ruth Kastner. She wrote a book. It's called the Unseen Worlds or something like that. I guess I should look at it real quick.
Yeah, why don't you take a peek? We could just do that plug at the end. You want to just do it at the end?
Yeah, let's do it at the end. Let's go to the news. We'll come back. We'll interview Dr. Ruth Kastner about quantum theory and aliens and things like that. And then that's it.
I love that this is what we have for him going into the news. You're going to do the news. Oh, no. And then we just go right on.
It's going to be great. So here's
very
the news.
Promising.
Here's the news with Brett on the Star Time Podcast.
All right, from Sorry Time Podcast, this is the news with Bretford. All right, this time it looks like they're really onto something. Something real. That is very clearly a piece of machinery, not part of the natural landscape. However, it is possible, or it's impossible to tell, rather, whether or not it's simply a piece of equipment from a rover or another spacecraft. Jumping to the conclusion it's from an alien ship or is a UFO drone is a bit premature, though it is tempting, and it's certainly not the first image of something UFO-like found on the surface of Mars. Much closer to home, the Daily Nebraskan tells us that their state has a surprising amount of UFO sightings and shares a collection of Throwback Thursday UFO sightings researched by Lincoln UFO Busters in the late 1980s, along with other cases of paranormal oddness, courtesy of the Fordian Research Center Journal. And here's some amusing but not all shocking news from the UFO trail. According to their IP records, Homeland Security reads UFO trail. You heard it here. It's a safe bet that they're in good company, as it's likely a lot of our UFO neighbors are on the internet and have had the same visitors. Virtual men in black who have forgotten to wave their memory zappers in our faces and cover their own trail. In other words, in other news, in more simpler terms, is the very long, extensively researched paper on precognition abilities, where the controversial status of precognition and other anomalous effects, it's collectively known as PSI. Yes? It's a long slog through a lot of technical details, all of these experiments, but it's well worth reading, at least maybe through the abstract, because the results are fascinating. That's Feeling the Future, a meta-analysis of 90 experiments of the anomalous anticipation of random future events. Lastly in the news, Destination Pong. Building upon his precognition thesis, Eric Wargo proposes the future is as powerful as an influence on the present as conventional casuality. Sure. Supporting this hypothesis is the growing evidence, that's right, evidence, of quantum phenomena influencing the macro scale world and our daily lives. There are other players in the seemingly complex yet ultimately simple proposal, facilitating the connection of future probabilities with present possibilities. In fact, the principle is best illustrated by the scene in Tron, where Jeff Bridges is destroyed by the remade and then remade in the virtual world. The data Eric is drawing upon could fit in a thimble, but the quickening pace of quantum neuroscience and related fields will fundamentally change our worldview. That's the news on Starry Nights.
Starry Times.
Starry Times. Ah.
All right, and welcome back to the Starry Time Podcast. Dave, how
are you? Yes, sir. I'm doing good.
Brett, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great.
This is a treat. We have a lot of firsts tonight. This is the first time we've ever had three co-hosts, I guess you will say. And this is also the first time we've ever had a female guest. It's very exciting. Wow. So it's the first time for everything. Moving on, are you excited? You've been asking for a couple of things. You've been asking for a female guest, and you've been asking for somebody from outside the United States. So I delivered on one of your requests.
Yeah, but also I would love to have somebody that's from New York. So you got that one too.
Okay,
now,
good.
You said two different locations, and really it only is the two. Between four people, only two locations.
That's true.
As far as state-wise.
We are excited because today we have with us Dr. Ruth Kastner. She has just done a lot. She has an MS in physics from the University of Maryland. She currently is promoting a book that she wrote called Understanding Our Unseen Realities, Solving Quantum Riddles,
wow.
Which is just, you know, everything you could hope for. Ruth, welcome to the Starry Time Podcast.
Well, thanks very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Ruth, does it bother you that we spell starry with one R? Does that bother you?
No, I just kind of looked at it and I thought, let's see, is it story time? Is it star? I'm not sure what that is. It's in a quantum superposition.
it is. I love this.
So we did it because we wanted, you know, like the pun, the playoff story time. We want to do starry time.
I totally got that.
And thank you. The only person ever to have said that. So thank you. You make us feel better already.
The other name we were going to be was the Married Bachelors, just to get the superpositions going strong.
Just get that little sort of contradictory paradoxical flavor.
Yeah. We want as many paradox in our name as possible, just to get the curiosity factor going.
So, Ruth, we're a paranormal skeptic show. So essentially, we talk to people in the paranormal world, usually, about what they believe and why they believe it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've seen as we've studied this is there's a lot of alternate realities, if we can say it that way, in this world. That's funny. In this kind of study of paranormal. And so I figured what better than to bring on someone who actually deals with different realities. So one thing you need to know, we're not as smart as you. So you need to know that first and foremost. So kind of give us this idea of unseen realities. How is that even possible? And why is it important that we actually understand that?
And also if you could share like how you even got interested in
how you
kind of started studying that in the first place.
First, I just wanted to follow up on something you said. You said you're a paranormal skeptic group. Does that mean you're skeptical about paranormal?
Yeah. So we kind of look at all things paranormal, UFOs, ghosts, and we're like, we're not so sure, but there's a lot of people that are. So why is that?
Okay. Very nice. Okay. Well, I'm good. I'm glad to hear that because there are a lot of people who like to take quantum theory and kind of say, therefore, this supports my paranormal phenomenal experiences.
Sure,
and,
sure.
You know, I'm not going to help that kind of goal. If that's what people wanted to do, it's not necessarily quite that easy, you know.
Now, anything you can do to help me not believe in UFOs, I will be fine with.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, UFOs, I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, if you got abducted, I'm not going to, argue with your experience, but I've never been abducted, so I can't comment on that.
Right.
But, let's see, I guess as far as my interest in this, I was studying physics at the University of Maryland, and I was just getting ready to kind of go through and get a PhD and work in a lab or something. And then I found out about the EPR experiment, which is this now kind of a famous thought experiment by three folks, Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen, back in the 1930s, where they wrote this paper. And they said, there's something strange going on with quantum theory because I can cook up this so-called entangled state that has two particles in it. And the state they came up with was actually a little bit flaky. And it's since been, the physicists have kind of reworked this example and come up with a little bit better state that you could actually make in a lab. But it's basically these two quanta are created, and they're in this combined state such that if you send one particle, each particle off to opposite ends of the galaxy, say, and you had physicists there on either end to make measurements, it seems to be telling you, quantum theory seems to be telling you that what one of the experimenters does on one end of the galaxy, depending on what measurement setting he chooses on to measure his particular particle that's coming at him, will instantaneously somehow collapse or affect the other particle that's way across the other side of the galaxy. In a way, you know, it's non-locality. So, and that just kind of grabbed my attention, and I said, "Well, there's something really weird going on." And that's what I like about physics, is that it's a way of kind of looking more deeply into reality. And it turns out that reality is not always what it appears to be.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so interesting to me. I have a friend that is studying, he's getting his doctorate in physics at Madison, Wisconsin. And we were both talking about how interesting it is that as we're continuing to push the boundaries of how far we can see out into space, that same thing is happening on a level was going smaller and smaller, and right. In either direction, it's like there's infinity going on. We haven't hit a wall yet. It just keeps getting smaller and smaller. And then the funny thing is that in the example that you gave, that you can still take that quantum level and then spread it out into the universal level. And then there's that the quantum entanglement allows that mystery is kind of on both ends, just blowing my mind. Yes. Just completely, just to see that they're that almost like solving the equations on a quantum level are helping us to figure out the, you know, where the universe is ending and stuff like that. It's crazy.
Like full circle. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this little film called Powers of 10. As a child, I saw this, and what you were saying just reminded me of that, where they start, it starts with a picture of some people just sitting in a park, like New York Central Park. And they zoom out, you know, and you go way out and you see the planet, you know, they zoom out, you're outside the solar system and so on. And you're going to these big, big length scales. And then they reverse it and they take you back to these people in the park. And then they start zooming in.
Yes.
And
yeah.
It's kind of like, whoa, everything's kind of going away here. You know, so what's at the bottom of all of it?
It's so great, though. It makes me feel so happy to know that. It's funny that you can feel so small in one of those, and then you feel enormous in the other one, like on the same token. It's so crazy. But so how has that, this studying that particular thing with the quantum entanglement led you to kind of get into this idea of multiple realities? Is that having something to do with the multiverse, or what does that mean exactly in what you're studying?
Yeah, actually, my approach is very different from the very popular sort of many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. I actually argue that that's wrong. And I mean, I know it's really a fun idea, and it really captures our imagination. And I'm a Trek fan, a Star Trek fan, so I'm seeing the episode parallels where, you know, Worf is coming back, and he's had, you know, depending on what world he's in, he's had all these different experiences, and it's really fun to think about, but I don't really think that works, and the reasons are somewhat technical, and I've talked about them a little bit on my blog. And what I argue instead is that it appears to me that quantum theory, based on its mathematical formulation, that it has a certain mathematical character, that the way it describes the objects, such as the very tiny, you know, constituents of matter that we're looking at with this theory, that the fact that they can be entangled and so on, that the kinds of states that they're in are described by mathematical objects that are many dimensional. So that's maybe what you were thinking of. It's a multidimensional description.
Right.
And it has, so basically if you have those two entangled particles, you're dealing with six spatial dimensions. You're dealing with a state that has, you know, three spatial dimensions for each of those particles, and it's in one space. And some people think of this as configuration space, as sort of an abstract mathematical space, and they call it abstract, of course, because they they think, well, if it's not space-time, then it must just be something abstract. It can't be real.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic idea is what these objects are described by is a theoretical object that seems to be describing a larger manifold, a larger domain. And as I just said, people go, well, that's just an abstract mathematical space. And what they're doing is they're saying they've got this usual, very common idea that, you know, we all do, that we live in space-time and that reality is in space-time. And that's mm-hmm. kind of like a container for all of reality. But what I'm suggesting is that that's not really true. And that reality is bigger than what we think of as that space-time container. And my suggestion is that quantum theory is saying that. It's saying, look, these are real things. You know, people can create these objects in the lab and manipulate them and create these entangled states and verify that they did have an entangled state. So it's real. It exists in some sense, but it doesn't fit into space-time.
Sure.
So that's the basic idea, that these objects are real, but they've clearly got this mathematical character that makes it, you know, impossible for them to fit into space-time.
Right.
So you're saying that there's not different worlds, so to speak, as if there's like different realities with people living and moving and breathing and things, but there's different realities. But what exactly is going on in these different realities if it's not different worlds? Is it just nothingness? Is it just something just to put a label on it? What is it exactly?
Well, the picture I like to use is that of an iceberg. And I talk about this in my book where, you know, you pretend like you're in the Titanic or hopefully, you know, maybe a ship with better lifeboat, you know, equipment. And you're heading out there and you see this little mountain of ice and you go, okay, you know, not a problem. We'll just go around that. But, you know, as we all know, the iceberg is hugely bigger than that below the surface of the ocean. So my suggestion is that our ordinary space-time reality, our concrete, you know, classical world where we know where everything is and nothing's in a superposition, that's like the tip of the iceberg. And that's what delineates the space-time realm. And then the quantum realm supports all of that. But it's hidden. So it's like the part of the iceberg that's hidden underneath the surface. And I see it as a dynamical realm where you do have these objects that are described by quantum theory interacting and through this transactional process, which is what I talk about in my book, that is what describes this physical process of manifestation where these more abstract possibilities that I say are nevertheless real. They're just hidden. So they seem more abstract to us. And they're really there and they're having various interactions. And then when you have the right kind of interaction, you get concrete events that kind of crystallize out of that hidden portion and become manifest in the tip of the iceberg, so to speak.
Wow. Okay. So you mentioned earlier that the what we're seeing that are things that are not in superpositions. Does that mean that anything that is in a superposition would be the things you can't see?
Right. Anything like these entangled states where, you know, you've sent them off and, you know, you've directed them in a way that they will be detected at opposite ends of the galaxy. They're actually doing whatever they're doing in this hidden part of reality. They're not actually through space-time at all.
And so then what would cause it to be, I mean, you kind of started hinting at this, what would cause it to become untangled so that it would be pushed to the tip part of the iceberg or the part that we experience with within our reality or that we can experience with our senses at least?
Well, this is where I suggest absorption comes in. And this is what's unusual about the interpretation that I work with here. And I should just give credit to John Kramer, who I think he's pretty well known. He is the one who came up with the basic transactional interpretation in the 1980s, and he's at the University of Washington.
Okay.
And, the basic idea is that, you know, in ordinary quantum mechanics and ordinary physics, we go, okay, I've got a photon being emitted. Okay, great. I'm comfortable with that. But in the way the theory is usually used in what's called the non-relativistic sort of low-energy, low-speed version of quantum theory, people kind of ignore the idea that absorption has anything to do with it. So they have trouble kind of saying, well, what happens when there's a measurement? Why do we get measurement? And the virtue of the transactional picture is that it includes the idea that there are emitters of quantum states, quantum objects, and there are also absorbers, and they both play a vital role. So when you send off this photon, you know, or whatever kind of state you have, usually they talk about two entangled electrons that have spins that are entangled, and you send them off, then you have detectors that interact, that actually interact with those quantum states and respond dynamically with the kind of a real entity that's kind of strange because it's characterized by negative energies. And so this is why people are kind of like skeptical of this interpretation, because they're uncomfortable with what's called advanced solutions to their equations or these negative energy states. If you include that, it all works out. And I kind of talk about in my book about mathematically, it all works out because this reaction of the absorber is also in that sort of hidden realm. So you're never going to see it. You know, we're never going to detect negative energy. It's only one part of a process that this interaction between this sort of what John Kramer calls the offer wave, which has positive energy, and what he calls the confirmation wave from the absorber that's characterized by negative energy. But these are both kind of possible energies. And when there is a transaction like this, these two objects, these two processes combine to create real concrete energy that is no longer just abstract and just hidden, but actually becomes that real energy on the tip of the iceberg.
I think that reminds me of, I was listening to Lawrence Krauss. I'm sure you know who you've like listened to him and stuff. He was trying to describe how something could come from nothing. And it sounds a lot like what you're saying, where he was talking about like, well, he was kind of basically trying to justify the Big Bang being something that came from nothing. And he was explaining it in a way where there was that two different energies that were like offsetting each other, which I think was what he was talking about with the negative energy. And then that's how essentially a moment could spark what seemed like nothing, which would kind of like you're talking about, like the below the iceberg became something suddenly out of nowhere.
Yeah. That would fit in with, and I don't, you know, I don't really can't comment specifically on his, what he was saying, cause I don't know what it is, but based on what you're saying, you could have this realm of possibilities. And some people talk about this as sort of the vacuum state. You know, it's common knowledge now that what we think of as the vacuum is not really empty. It seems to have
the dark energy.
Dynamic. That's actually the dark energy. Is a different. Well, yeah, you could actually see that as evidence of this quantum level. So in that sense, you could have no space time at all, but you could have this area of possibilities that can give rise to space-time in that way.
Interesting. One question, going back to the iceberg analogy. So you have everything that's under the water that exists. It just isn't kind of going into our reality yet. So does that, but it will. So does that kind of allow us to assume that everything's bound to happen, everything's destined to happen out of those, you know, realities that we can't see that aren't kind of in our reality yet, but it's bound to happen, it's bound to come out of the water, we're bound to see it eventually, or is there some sort of free will still available?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, because quantum theory really is indeterministic. There's an element of chance or randomness there. So, now, some people try to get rid of that by putting in hidden variables and things and try to get back some deterministic story. But what I'm suggesting is that, no, let's just take quantum theory at face value. And what it tells us is that, you know, if you have an emitted quantum state for a photon, you've got many different absorbers that respond to that single so-called offer wave, the quantum state. And it's completely indeterministic as to which absorber is going to be the one to receive the real energy from that photon. So it's sort of like the photon has little feelers that go out and say, okay, you know, all you absorbers out there, who, you know, where am I going to end up? And it's like you spin the roulette wheel and they all respond. It's like a lottery almost. And the photon ends up just kind of choosing one. And all the energy, this is what it means for energy to be quantized. That single quantum can't be divided up. It can't kind of spread itself and give a little piece of a photon to all the absorbers that respond. Instead, it has to pick one. And that's the aspect of quantum theory that I think does allow for genuine free will, because things are not predetermined to happen.
Huh. Okay. So that being said, on a grander scale, I guess, actually, before we move on from that, I'm curious, what role do you think that gravity plays? Because we've talked about time and space a lot, but what role do you think that gravity plays in this iceberg analogy? Like, is that something that can become in and out the same way, or is that something that's constant, or how does that fall into your view?
Okay. Well, gravity, you know, according to general relativity, is a property of the structure of space-time. And the nice thing about this proposal, and I don't claim to have a, you know, theory of quantum gravity worked out, but there's a nice way in which my proposal aligns with something called causal set theory that has been proposed by a group of physicists, among them Raphael Sorkin and his colleagues have. You can, you know, look that up if you want. It's called causal set approach to quantum gravity. And they basically say that space-time kind of grows. And when it grows, it ends up with a certain structure. And that structure will give you gravity, because it's basically, you know, it's the curvature of space-time that gives rise to those gravitational phenomena. And so the nice thing about this story or this proposal, if you know, you buy the idea maybe that space-time itself can be created event by event out in a growing sort of way as like the tip of the iceberg coming out of this submerged quantum realm, then it's going to have a certain structure. And where there are a lot of events because you've got a lot of mass kind of, you know, interacting and creating these ongoing transactions, you're going to have more curvature because you're going to have more events there. So, so there is a natural way in which gravity can emerge in that picture.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that always becomes like just a factor that I think that they use a lot of times. And when we were backing up slightly, when I'm talking about the multiverse theory and how that becomes like in the equation for, I guess, string theory and stuff, how gravity is kind of able to flow freely sometimes between the different. And that explains a lot of, I don't know. Anyways, it's an interesting how that, but how yours kind of bridges that through kind of like explaining how time and space itself is event by event. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So now we moving from a quantum level to a larger level, what would this kind of quantum superposition, how would that affect physical objects, like on a larger scale, like people, humans, and you know what I'm saying? Like, how would it affect? Would it allow for something to be alive and dead at the same time, for example? Or,
Yeah, it solves that problem because the idea is that, you know, absorbers are these real objects that are very tiny and they're atoms. So your basic absorber, it could be some other object, but usually it's an atom that could have some eligible, you know, higher energy states to jump into for its electrons to jump to. And so an atom, because, you know, you include absorption in this transactional picture, what's doing the work of collapsing things and making things become manifest and to break these superpositions by through these absorber responses, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you got these entangled states and one of them is responded to by an absorber on one end of the galaxy and the other is responded to by this other absorber. And so that sort of breaks the superposition and each one of those absorbers has now changed its state and increased its energy or whatever. And that is the point at which you have collapse and you have events becoming manifest in space-time. And so these events that are manifest in space-time are just not in superpositions, because that's how you get space-time events through these outcomes, through these what I call actualized transactions, in which energy is really transferred from an emitter to an absorber. And the emitters and absorbers are these very tiny objects. And so mm-hmm. it always becomes localized naturally because the energy goes into a single atom. So for instance, if you go back to the Schrodinger's cat experiment, you know, the famous experiment where you've got a cat that's supposedly alive and dead at the same time. If you include absorption in the picture, that cures that whole problem because you've got this radioactive atom and you have responses of absorbers that are all over the place. And they are responding to this offer wave from this unstable atom. And so you're going to have an absorption of that particle that, you know, is released from the atom. And at that point you have genuine collapse and you have some definite event in space-time and you don't have anything else in a superposition. So this superposition okay. doesn't kind of infect the other macroscopic objects in the experiment.
Interesting.
Wow.
So as I kind of listen to this, there's so much to it that that to me is just really interesting and surprising. If you were to kind of bring it down to one thing that you would say quantum theory would, this would be the most surprising thing that it would affect this reality. What would you say that one thing would be?
Well, that reality is much bigger than we thought, and there is more to reality than space-time. If I had to say one, that sure. the second thing would be, and that we do we can have real free will. We don't have to be, buying into this idea that you hear a lot now. You know, there's no real free will because physics just tells us there's no. That everything is already out there, and it really doesn't, and that's a misconception. But that's a whole other program. So, yeah.
So going back, going back to the whole paranormal thing, since this is a paranormal podcast, I do want to dive in a little bit. It seems as if one theory that we hear a lot is kind of the realities that are actually different worlds, and so aliens are able to go from this world, abduct somebody, whatever, and then go to a different reality. Or different worlds, and they're able to travel through space-time to that different reality, to that different world because of technology or whatever. Or ghosts, for instance, are able to go from their dimension, a 2D dimension, to a 3D dimension, and back and forth because of the alternate realities. So would you say that your theory, on quantum theory, would kind of debunk that, so to speak?
Well, it wouldn't support it in any way. I mean, support the many worlds picture. We don't have a whole bunch of different space times out there. That whole picture becomes required when you buy into the Schrodinger cat thing and you think that Schrodinger's cat is in a superposition, so he's got to be alive in one world and dead in the other. And that just comes, I think, from a failure to include the absorption that's a real physical process. So I don't think we have those many worlds. So I don't, my approach wouldn't offer any support for those kinds of explanations.
Right. And so what you're saying kind of, you mentioned this earlier, is that because there's so much space within this time, it's within our kind of universe, that all that other stuff that's going on, it's just within the kind of empty space that it seems like empty space to us. It's all within it though. It's not, there's nothing outside that's kind of coming in. It's actually within it. It's all within here, within the absorption and the producers and all that stuff. Because I don't know if you've ever heard this. This is an example for ghosts that I've heard before that's trying to use like different dimensions to explain different phenomenons. Have you ever heard the analogy of like a man that's in a 2D man that's in a 3D world and he's experiencing a 3D ball in his 2D world? And as it's bouncing.
Oh, yeah, I talk about that in my book, Flatland, yeah.
Yeah, Flatland, right.
Right.
And so in that example, just so I'll say it so that anybody listening to this can kind of know what we're talking about. In this example, if a man in a flat world was experiencing a 3D ball that was kind of just bouncing up and down, it would just look like, let's say that the ball was red, it would look like a circle or a line. It wouldn't be a 3D, it would just be 2D. So it would just be a line that got bigger and bigger. And then it would get smaller and smaller as the ball passes through his 2D world. And right. So for him, he would have no idea what's going on. It would just look like this crazy, this wild. It's funny that his perspective would give him who knows what to try and explain it, trying to use his 2D mind to explain this thing. And so I know I can actually, it would be cool to see how you explain that using your theory. But before that, I also want to say that I was listening to somebody explain how that using time as almost a fourth factor in our 3D world, like using time as a variable, that a place, like let's say an old house that's had like a long, well, people have lived there for a long time, that if time was all of a sudden in that kind of played a role in the same way where it could like kind of bounce around, then you might see other glimpses of a different time happening in the same way. And in the same way that like maybe our senses have not developed senses that would be able to make anything of that, in the same way that someone like that might not have seen color. Like if trying to the first eye that was able to detect color would trying to explain that would be kind of hard. So somebody that maybe is able to sense is sensitive to this variable of time might see these things, but they're not able to explain it to someone that's not as sensitive to it in the same way. I don't know. It's just an interesting way to think about it, but I was just curious what your thoughts were on that, thinking on it from that perspective.
For the first thing you said, I would say that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, we're the guy in Flatland who's seeing these weird things happening that seem non-local and don't make any sense. That's exactly what we're seeing in physics when we do these experiments with entangled states. You know, that's non-locality. That's the quantum spookiness. That's like, whoa, you know, what's going on here? This can't be real. No, I'm going to say quantum theory is just about information because this can't be real, you know. And so there's kind of a denial to take these things as physically real. And what I suggest is, well, they are physically real, but they're going on. They have their existence in a higher domain, just like, you know, the sphere in the Flatland story is coming in and interacting with the little square guy and freaking him out, right? Well, the quantum phenomena are freaking us out in exactly the same way. And so that, to me, suggests that, yeah, that's because they are intersecting with us and we can kind of detect them in certain limited ways, just like the flat person can detect that sphere in limited ways because he's confined to this lower dimension. So that's, you know, I suggest that's why the quantum domain seems so weird to us and why most physicists and a lot of philosophers of physics want to just say, oh, it's just knowledge. It's just about information. It's not physically real because it's got these crazy properties.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that analogy so much because it, at the same time, helps me to understand how much I don't understand. Like it's funny that how it does that. Like it gives a very clear example of how there's stuff we don't know that we just can't, we don't have the ability to even detect.
Right.
But at the same time, it doesn't, it's, although it does that, it also it starts you on a path to kind of start figuring out how you could work out where that other stuff is. Even if you can't see it, you can start like, you know, making predictions based on like, how there's trends happening and stuff like that. And you can at least get an idea of how it might look out there, even if you don't have the lens to see it necessarily.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what the theory does. I mean, that my suggestion is, you know, these guys who develop quantum theory, they were scratching their heads and going, I give up. I cannot come up with a good model of the atom that I understand in terms of my classical theories. It gives me a mechanistic picture of how this atom works. So they gave up on that, you know, and they came up with this theory through other means that works. But it has this weird mathematical character that has this multidimensional property to it. And so I'm just saying, well, yeah, that's telling you about this higher dimensional reality, if you will, that's hidden. But can interact with us in certain ways so that even though the empirical, you know, the empirical world, that's a term that just means the world we can detect with our five senses, that's the limited world of space-time. And it's important to science because obviously it keeps us honest and it keeps us from going off with theories that aren't right at all and have no correspondence to reality. But clearly quantum theory does, and it just has this strange character that seems to point to this larger realm. So, yeah, I think that's sort of the natural way to interpret it.
So cool.
I'm definitely going to have to read your book. That is so awesome. Just to see that completely flip side from what I'm used to seeing about that, like the factor you're saying of the multidimensional factor, just seeing it play out on that, just a completely different theory on that. I actually had never read anything about that. So that'll be super interesting to read about.
For sure. Okay.
Could you kind of like give us a synopsis of the book, like kind of just to for the people that are listening to kind of give an idea of how this is different than your average book, and what the premise of it is and everything?
Okay, well, let's see. I cover several different aspects of this whole question, but you know, actually, online, I think Amazon has the first chapter, maybe even some of the second chapter free, so that's like a preview that people can read. Amazon. And in the first chapter, I just kind of lay out, you know, there's all these puzzles that we know, you know, there are many books out there that do a very good job of saying, you know, how weird quantum theory is. And so I just briefly review the puzzles and the, you know, the paradoxes. I give a non-technical introduction to the basic transactional interpretation that John Kramer came up with. And I just kind of use some little symbols that help people get a picture for these quantum states and how they interact. And I just talk about how there's, you know, I talk about Flatland. I use that as an example. And I say, you know, I think that quantum theory is pointing to this larger realm and that reality is bigger than we thought. And that quantum theory is describing this hidden realm. And I just kind of talk about different aspects of that. And I talk about how you know, there are seen and unseen aspects to reality. I'm kind of looking at my chapter list here. So, and how space-time comes out of that reality through these actualized transactions. And I touch a little bit on the issue of free will and how this picture can explain why we have this sense of the flow of time. Because many times people try to debunk that. And that kind of relates to what you were saying previously, this idea that it's called a block world, the idea that all of space is there and all of time is there and that we're somehow kind of moving through it. But I actually think that's when you do that, you end up with fate and you end up with no real, you know, I think there's no real free will there. There are certainly attempts to kind of get around that, but I think those are kind of linguistic little maneuvers that don't really address the problem. So I talk about how this gives you a picture of space-time that's emerging. And in this picture, it's the present has some special significance. That's where all of our experience happens. And the past kind of flows away from us like this, a snake sort of shedding its skin. And the future is genuinely open. So it's genuinely possibilities. So that's kind of just an overview.
Before we end our time with you, which has been great, by the way, I do want to kind of hear you. We hear you talking a lot about free will, and it seems to be something that you're really passionate about and that you think is really important. Why do you think it's so important that we have free will and that it's not completely set in stone what is going to happen?
Well, you know, I don't necessarily think that people should, you know, buy my sense that we do have free will. It's very common for people to say, well, you know, we could be wrong. We could be confused or, you know, just suffering from some kind of artifact or something. But what bothers me is that people say things like physics implies there is a block world and therefore there is no free will. And that's just like an incorrect statement. And that's what really gets me annoyed, is that it is not true that physics implies that there is a block world. That's just completely false. It's just technically wrong. So, you know, let's at least get the argument or the discussion on the correct ground, which is
right.
There might be a block world, but there also might not be. And of course, my proposal is one proposal that is completely consistent with relativity and so on. And it doesn't have a block world. And it also says that if quantum mechanics is indeterministic, then we naturally do have free will. So why assume that you're disillusioned or that you're you know, deluded about something if you don't need to be?
Sure.
So that's kind of the simple point.
It's funny, Ruth, you work in quantum theory and you guys debate about free will or not. And then I work in the church world and we debate about if there's free will or not. It just seems like everybody in the whole world's debating on if we have free will or not. It's just really interesting to me.
It's an important
at least we have the free will to argue about free will.
Right. Maybe we don't.
I know. That's the joke.
Ruth, that you do until it prove otherwise.
Right.
Ruth. Yeah.
Ruth, I do want people that want to be able to read your book, like me and Dave, to be able to read your book. How do we get a copy of your book?
Well, you know, you can get it online from the usual places. It's out there. It's on Amazon. It's from World Scientific Press, and you can go to their website. You can also go to my blog, which is just transactionalinterpretation.org.
Of course it is.
And I have some information on it there. So
wonderful. Rude, awesome. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. It was a treat, such a treat, especially kind of talking about how this whole quantum theory thing works in the world of paranormal. It's just really interesting to think about it. So thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, and one more thing. You said you have a blog too. What's the blog?
Yes, that's just my website/blog. It's called Transactional Interpretation.
Okay, same thing.
Come on, Dave.
Perfect. I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to read that. She said she mentioned something that she had written there. So
and Ruth, don't be surprised if you get emails from us just asking what the heck you're talking about.
That would be great. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks,
awesome.
Ruth.
Thank you.
All right, that was Dr. Ruth Kastner. She wrote a book, and it's a wonderful book that you should go and buy on the Amazons or wherever you want to go. It's called Understanding Our Unseen Realities, Solving Quantum Riddles. That is Dr. Ruth Kastner. Let's give it up.
Oh, yes. Look up.
Hey, one thing, even in that whole, you know, talking about the book and all that stuff, I feel like we've gotten a little sloppy. Can I say it that way?
I think that if you were going to say it sloppily, then that would be the best way to
exactly
say it.
That's exactly what I was talking about. So I feel like we've gotten a little goofy, a little weird. This is a serious business. This is a business venture that we're doing.
Yeah.
And I think we need to take it a little bit more seriously. So let's just relax and enjoy the next few minutes together and be a little bit more serious. Take this podcast seriously, please. Brett?
For once. Oh, yeah.
Brett, you didn't say much during that podcast.
I did not.
Or during that interview. I am interested in why you're here if you weren't going
And
to.
What your thoughts are on everything. Just what did you absorb from that conversation?
I absorbed
did you notice that
little.
I said absorb because
that was
a
really
good thing? Okay,
that was a clever pun. Clever pun for sure.
Thank you.
My brain is swollen with information that I can't possibly process in 1,000 lifetimes. So I learned a lot about things I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought she was very nice. She was very
nice lady.
Maternal, I think, would be a good word that y'all seem to use.
Yeah.
And she was also very polite, given the fact that she was on a paranormal podcast, which has nothing to do with what she's talking
about. She's more polite than you are about the whole situation.
Brent, share the thought that you had about in the middle of the interview, how you didn't want to necessarily bring up the paranormal.
Yeah, I felt bad because she's very smart and she's doing her whole smart thing. And then I have to dive back in and try to bring it back to the fact that this is a paranormal podcast. So
no, we're just a couple skeptics.
We're just a couple of paranormal skeptics. So it was like, hey, smart, smart, smart. Paranormal. And not that paranormal people are dumb. They're not at all. They're very smart people.
It's more that, okay, so she's
just
an expert
worlds.
In her field, and we are the furthest from an expert in what we're claiming this podcast to be about.
Yeah.
we couldn't even offer up like how to do that. And so we talked about how we're going to do this. What now that we're kind of – In the exit portion of the show, let's discuss kind of like what we got from what she said, how that plays out to our skepticism and our theories, and you know, what if that changes anything for us? What
does
it do for you, Brand?
Because I was beginning to become okay with the fact that there could be multiple realities, but what described was not what I think of when I think of multiple realities.
No, not at all.
So She's
talking about hidden stuff in this reality.
Yeah, it's like, it's like kind of reality because it's reality, but it's just not our reality, if you will.
I think the reality that we experience is a good way to experience because it's all there. I think I probably might have sounded kind of like a dork when I was listening to her.
In the end.
when I got excited about the fact that like it's really like this is something that I really like enjoy hearing different people's theories on, and I genuinely have never heard the absorption, like how that plays into on the molecular level and how that kind of fills in the justification for the part of the equation in quantum mechanics that like within quantum entanglement. I've never heard that as the reason for why why there's like how the multi kind of like the need for multi dimensions, how that kind of like fulfills that. And I think it is, it excites me because I hate, honestly, I hate the idea of multiple universes for the reason that it doesn't, like, there's no way we're going to be able to ever prove it or experience it. And so it's just frustrating to me. Sure. So any, the idea that it's all here and that we're just kind of like, it's kind of popping in and out, that's exciting to me. And I know that she almost kind of, okay, here's what I'll say. It doesn't, it makes me maybe believe that there is justification for why people experience ghosts in general, but I think that it also offers an alternative for what the actual reason that those things are happening are. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that it really is maybe just a person that's their soul floating around, but it could be that there's some weird something happening that's coming into whatever, coming in and then popping back out, like into the unseen part of our reality. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yep.
It just gives a whole different way for that time. Because for me, I was always thinking that if there was a way for that to be kind of explained by science, it would be, well, two things. One, that are like on a neurological level, that like our brains are just like experiencing things weirdly. Or two, I kind of was going the multiverse as a potential thing where I already kind of explained in the podcast, I had read that there could be a way for two different universes to interact in like a weird way that you can see just kind of an overlap. But that's so crazy to think of two universes just bouncing off each other. The way that she's describing is a lot less, I don't know, violent, almost like sure. a thing to say. It's just, it's way more believable to think that there's just like on even just an atom level that there's just like photon that's passing in and out. Like, that could be, I mean, isn't that what you kind of see on the cameras? Like little things popping around. There's like a little, there's a firefly and then you're like, oh, it's a ghost. The little orbs.
Yeah. I mean, I am interested, like we got into it a little bit, but the fact that you, like you could split an atom and bring an atom around the world and then mess with an atom over on this side of the world and it would affect the atom over there.
I know what you're saying. It wasn't atoms.
Not an atom. It's whatever. A cell?
A quantum particle.
Yeah, quantum particle.
Like, that to me is fat. Like, I still can't quite understand that. Like, that.
It's awesome. It's like, so it's, awesome.
Like, I do want to, I wish, you know, I didn't want to get too, like, crazy technical, but, like, how is it that that's a thing? Like, that those two are always connected. And then that kind of dives into like in this world of like, you know, the paranormal world, a lot of people believe that we're all connected. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how like we're able to experience things that we can't fully understand. It's like different is, you know, like people that aren't or beings that aren't connected to us. But we as humans are all connected. And so we can kind of look at that, what she was kind of talking about with the quantum particles and being able to split them and still mess with them and it would affect the other one. I don't know. It's just interesting, like how those, like the whole, like the paranormal world and the you know, the reality world are still very much connected in ways that I think are more confusing than we would ever.
Yeah. Think and that's of what it. She did a great job explaining it too, like how it's unseen, but yeah, just how like those two particles, maybe like if there's six different dimensions on three of them, they're connected and that's why they're quantumly entangled. And then when they are passed through, like when they pass into the visible is when they become quantum, the untanglement or whatever. I don't know what the word was that for that, when they become untangled.
I wonder if she's going to listen back to this part and just be like, I didn't say any of this, but.
Well, that's kind of how I feel like even within the podcast that I was explaining things that she said and she was like, no, okay. I'll tell you the exact moment that I realized that I said something that was absolutely not, and then she was the most polite, is when she was talking about all the empty space in the universe. I thought she was talking about like the, because she was talking about hidden stuff.
Oh, yeah,
I thought she was talking about
I said
dark matter, but yeah. She was talking about the empty space and the fact that like even in between like particles, like there's space.
She was so nice. She was like,
she went off on that and actually gave me credit and like went off on a thing. I was like, thank you, because that is not what she was meaning at all. But and even as she said, I was like, oh crap, that sounds like an idiot.
I would love to have her as a teacher teach me things so that I could just say things and she'd be really sweet about it and kind of make me feel like I'm semi smart.
Yeah, it's
When in reality, I'm not. Hey, that brings it. That sums it.
It does.
Brett,
and you know what else?
You were here.
It reminds us, Brandon, doesn't it remind us all that we can all still be learning? Like, when you get to be an adult, you think you just at least have, like, a general knowledge of everything. And then you talk to someone like her, and you're like, wait a second, I actually just don't know anything about this. And then it just helps you realize that there's just so much to learn out there.
The older I get, the more I realize I don't understand anything, you know?
That was a fancy way to say that.
Thanks.
Yeah. Real sense.
Brett, thanks for channeling with us on the Star Time podcast. How do you feel, like, now that you've actually heard an episode, how do you feel about it?
Well, thanks for having me. And I feel enlightened, for sure. I feel like an old man who doesn't know anything.
Do you feel like a photon that was just about to be absorbed?
Classic.
I feel like a photon. Maybe even an electron. I don't know.
Who knows? All the energy.
But maybe I'm being absorbed. Maybe I'm the bottom of the iceberg. You know? Yeah. Who? I mean, where am I?
You're just popping into the Brandon's apartment at the tip for a bit. Yeah. And you're back down under.
It's a townhouse, first of all.
It is a townhouse.
Brent, I haven't been to your new place yet. You haven't invited me to Greenville yet.
Actually, I have invited you multiple times.
Can I paint you a picture? Can I paint a picture of it?
Yeah,
just
sure.
a word picture.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
You walk into the door.
Right.
It's a beautiful dual level, little open space.
It's open concept.
Yeah. It's got an open space concept. And currently, being in the month of November, I'm assuming and maybe hoping that Caitlin has decorated it to a lovely fall theme. Lots of autumn, lots of colors.
Well, we did it together. Don't give her all the credit, please.
Yeah.
If there's anyone who loves seasons more than me, it is no one. So
there is a there's an LCD fireplace.
We even have the fireplace on tonight. No heat, though. We turned the heat down. It's an electric fireplace. We said, I don't quite need it yet, but I do want to see it.
They are needed.
It's good to have that option to just turn the heat right on off.
It is really nice.
Flames.
I wish I could do that with my fire.
Dave, no one else cares to know this, but we got our Airbnb today for New York. So.
Oh, yes.
And it has a fireplace.
Where is it at?
Williamsburg.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Can I come stay with you guys when you come?
Well, I'll send you some pictures. How about that?
Okay.
Hey, some interviews.
That's it. Hey, Brett, thanks for hanging out with me.
Hey,
thanks for hanging out with me.
Right.
From Greenville, South Carolina.
And from Brooklyn, New York.
This was the Starytime Podcast.
Let's go away for a while.